thanks for joining us for Take Two, a political podcast with a little bit of fun. And by fun, I mean we're talking about all sides of the issue. So if you only want to hear the right or the left because it feeds your inner self and makes you feel like we all agree with you, this is not the place for you. But if you'd like to hear opposing viewpoints, you've come to the right place.
Fun opposing viewpoints,
that's
right?
That's right.
Always fun.
Heidi Hatch with KUTV. Greg Hughes, who calls himself a citizen now.
Citizen Hughes.
I feel like you stole that from Jim DeBacchus. He used to call himself Citizen Jim DeBacchus or something. But
I stole it from Citizen Kane.
Oh, Citizen Kane. Yeah, okay.
Citizen Hughes.
You've the Ridge.
You've titled yourself.
I have. I've given myself.
Untitled.
Yes.
Mara, do you want to?
It's like
I don't need
the artist formerly known as Speaker Hughes. So
Mara Carabello, known as the owner of a business, a mom, and a wife.
That's right.
A fun Italian. I don't know.
That's right. I got
She's
a nice,
totally Italian too,
I
by
I have
the way.
A nice Irish first name, good Italian last name.
That works. So
they play
talking.
Bocce ball. They play it all the time. You have to see. Right in the office. No, in the hallway of the office. They're playing bocce ball all the time.
It's true.
They got gnocchi everywhere, and they've got, it's just unbelievable.
Gnocchi?
It's like, yeah.
Because that's what Italians do.
Yeah, that's what they do.
Everywhere.
Like all our family races motorcycles, you know, and just, you know, the high speed.
Do you have any gnocchi? This is good. Do you buy them like frozen from Trader Joe's, or do you like make them yourself?
Listening to Greg's tales.
I know. Okay, well, here's the fun conversation of the day before we get to the issues. The legislative session's in the second week. You both spend a lot of time up there. What is your beverage of choice that gets you going and keeps you going for the 24-hour-a-day cycles? Mara, Greg, what do you drink?
Oh, this is easy.
I feel
for
like
me.
You're a Diet Coke kind of guy, Greg.
No way. That's a baby drink. You might as well put that in a sippy cup of Diet Coke.
I would just tell the listeners at this point, just relax, because Greg doesn't have so much a drink as a regime.
That's exactly
right.
Down to the milliliter.
Okay, good. Let's
so hear. I start the day with a beverage called Rain, like REIGN, rain.
So not like
not
like
the rain,
purple
like
rain.
Precipitation,
like
but
Queen
like
Queen Elizabeth,
like the yeah, like royalty
Thor.
Rain over. So rain, yeah, like Fat Thor, like I am.
That sounds
so
dangerous.
I'm like Fat
okay.
Thor. So rain, it has 300 mil of caffeine. That's how you start your day.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Isn't a cup of coffee like 50 milligrams?
Who cares? Again, baby drinks. I don't do them. I do the 300 mil. Okay. No calories though, because I'm a real health conscious. I don't want to abuse my body. So
calories.
Zero calories, 300 mil of caffeine. I chase that about late morning with it's been a Red Bull, but lately it's been
Holy
this new one
heck.
Called Celsius, I think it's called. It's got another 200 mil in there.
Okay? I'm having heart palpitations.
I know.
Just listening.
Amen.
To
and that gets me to past lunch, and then, you know, I still, but I always try to, again, all healthy, not any sugar. I don't like any sugar.
Okay, I don't know if it's healthy
then,
just because it's sugar-free.
It's
so I think it's called Celsius
H
is my
unhealthy.
New one that I like. And then, but I have to wind it all down before 4 o'clock, because then if I drink anything with caffeine in it after 4, I stay up too late.
Your wife grounds you and puts
I
you in the
I get in
backyard.
Trouble, yes. I get in trouble, so.
And you like, aren't you sort of a blueberry, mango, pistachio kind of fella?
So I've
all of those together?
I have
drink the weird ones.
I have the blue raspberry one that I start with. And then I was really into this coconut Red Bull, and then they stopped making it. And then, but anyway, so there was a green one too.
Because it literally gave people wings where they died.
I don't know. They stopped. You know, those warning labels, I don't know why they even put those on there. No. It's probably harder to sell them when they keep putting warning
government conspiracy
across everything on the can. But no, I do. I like to, it's not just one drink. It's just...
This is every day, though.
Every single day.
Okay, wow. Mara, can you top that?
Again, this is going to be so right and left of center.
Are you a cappuccino
just buy
kind
our
of girl?
Drinks. So I like tea. I'm a huge tea fan. Caffeinated. Don't scallop me. I listen to you, Mr.
Yeah, I know,
Hughes.
I know.
So I do like a good bit of tea. Ugh. So in the summer, we're going green tea, or because we're talking caffeine here. We're not just talking
a cup
beverage. And so I'll do a caffeinated... cold tea sometimes in the morning. But if I'm feeling warm like it is now, I do a little bit of espresso and some almond milk with some cinnamon in it.
Ooh.
And I have been making it on my own lately.
You've been making it?
Yeah, with steaming it. And then if I really want to be indulgent because it's a little bit of calories, Beans and Brew, let's give a shout out to a local brewer, has the best chai. really good chai tea. Mm-hmm. Okay. With a little shot in it. And
fancy.
But that's sort of a high-calorie bev.
But I know, but sometimes you got to have one here and there.
It's good. So, yeah.
So I brought this up because I saw Angela Romero tweeting, and she was saying thanks because someone had dropped off, it looked like, a bunch of Zip Fizz to her office. And that's my beverage of choice. I don't
How many mil caffeine?
I've never even tried it.
It's super low. I don't even know. Well, I should have brought a tube in here, but
so it's a baby drink.
But it's like a
you drink
natural,
it with a sippy cup.
It's a natural form of caffeine. It's super low. I'm sure it's way less than coffee, but it's got I think maybe 100,000% more of the B12 than what you should probably have in a day.
Right.
And so it makes you, when you start drinking it, it's like first hits free. It makes you feel like a high school cheerleader. But after that, it's just like, you just keep needing it. So that's what I have. And I learned too, because sometimes you drink it and because there's so many vitamins in it, you have to go to the bathroom super quick and you don't always have time for that. So instead of mixing it in water, I do it firefighter style and just put the powder in my cheek and let it soak in through my...
Get out. That sounds
pretty boss.
That
right
sounds
there.
Hardcore.
I know.
So if we see you before a broadcast,
and
which
I'll tell you what,
like I just chewing my cheek. It's just
when
it.
I served in the legislature, and especially when I was serving as speaker, I don't think I ever stopped drinking Red Bull. I think I chain drank Red Bull. So I had one. So the product placement, I should have been paid by Red Bull because there isn't a press conference, there isn't a photograph, there's not a moment on the dais where there wasn't a can of Red Bull.
Okay. Well, when we post this podcast, we will add them
your
so they're aware.
Placement.
They're aware of all of our what should we call these? They're I don't know. It's what keeps
lifeline.
Us alive, right?
A variety, yes. Though. Like,
yeah.
Look at
seriously,
us.
None of us variety. Doing the same thing.
I'm only though caffeine in the morning and once. I'm not a day drinker like Greg is.
Well, that's boring. Boring.
And I try not to start till about 3 or 4 in the afternoon because I've still got to have my energy till 11 p.m. Yeah. Right. And the Zip Fizz is supposed to keep you going for 3 or 4 hours without a crash.
What about 5-hour energy? I see people
swig
those.
Caffeine makes my heart go nuts.
I think that
makes my heart actually work.
It makes it actually do its job.
I think it would stop if I stopped drinking.
So it's like
caffeine.
The paddles.
Yeah, exactly. I think that, I've actually had my blood pressure taken. It's very low. I think my body's gotten so used to it that when I'm not taking it, everything does kind of get slower.
Interesting. I have very low blood pressure just on a regular average every day. They say it's for elite athletes, and I guess us too, because I'm not an elite athlete.
That is right. That's probably right, too. That's probably why.
Well, now that we all know what keeps us going through the legislative session, hopefully this helps you if you've been listening, because I'm guessing that you take part. There's been a lot happening this week, and the newest today is the Senate has passed its income tax cut. And I know there's been a lot of different percentages out there, and their percentage was from 4.95 down to 4.85. That only gives, and I shouldn't say only, because depending on who you're talking to, $100 a year is a lot or it's not much. So the question is, Mara, is this enough money where it's smart to give people this money back because it's your money, we all need it, groceries are expensive, or can this money be better used just putting it towards education or something else in the state budget where we're like, we've got your money anyways, let's do something great with it.
So I'll say I believe the die is cast on this, but even having said that, I would still be someone who would assert that a directed tax would have a bigger impact. So whether that is on food or other essentials or other things that disproportionately hit middle to lower income people who have fallen further during COVID than anyone else. And I think that we do have a surplus. I would have liked to have seen a more strategic tax cut.
Interesting.
I love all tax cuts. I love the income tax. And look, a lot of people don't pay an income tax. There's a lot of ways that you reduce your tax liability.
A lot of rich people don't
No, not rich people. There's a lot of people that don't pay
an income
tax. If you're
low enough income, don't you end up getting most of
the
tax?
You add your child, I mean, it's just that we are fortunate to have good taxpayers because our income tax funds are public schools, health-related issues for children. We need good, healthy tax returns from our income tax. And I'm of the school of thought that when families have more money in their homes, they spend more. I think that will contribute to the tax collection on the things that they're able to spend their money on instead of having it taxed at a higher rate and having government spend it on. I think I'm a supply sider. So I love income tax, but look, you're not going to get me to say that I wouldn't like a food tax cut because I don't know that anybody's walking out of a grocery store nowadays looking at the receipt and having ever seen the cost higher to buy those groceries than they're seeing right now. The cost of food right now is unbelievable. And it's not just hitting the poorest of the poor. It's not a poverty advocate issue. I don't think right now. I think the cost of food has become draconian. And so is it going to be natural for a lot of citizens to look around when they're walking out of the supermarket and looking at that bill going, my gosh, would they like some relief? 100%. So I love the income tax cut. I like tax cuts. I think that the tax cuts feed back into the people. People will use those resources themselves.
So what do you
want to
see the House do next? Because the House says they'll plan to add to that. I know that the governor has been looking at possibly the sales tax on food, on groceries. I don't know that they've promised that would be, but they said maybe there's something else that the governor would like in it. What kind of, like if you had to pick your poison or your favorite tax cut, what kind of tax cut would you give us?
I don't have a favorite. I just like all tax cuts. I think the income tax has good momentum. I think it's, politics is the art of the possible. It's all math up there. And I think that that's where you see the momentum. And look, when we get under 5% as a state income tax, we get very, very competitive with surrounding states in terms of corporate expansion, corporate relocation, jobs. That lower tax, it matters. It matters when you're less than 5% on your state income tax because we compete with a state like Nevada that doesn't have an income tax. We are always looking at how our tax burden as a state compares to the surrounding states. And we always want to be one of the states that draws economic activity. And our income tax has that factor to it.
All right. I don't know if our groceries, this is off topic, are going to get any cheaper, but I don't know if you've been following this, but a lot of the Canadian truckers are headed to their capital right now that don't want to be vaccinated. I think it's about 20% to 25% of their trucking workforce, and they're not allowed across the U.S. border right now because you have to be vaccinated. I don't know what we import, export from Canada, but one would assume when you're taking that percentage from our northern and southern borders out of what they are bringing across the border, it's going to cause some problems. So I'm watching that closely because groceries are painful right now.
Is the
really
mainstream
painful.
Media covering that? Because I keep seeing it on social media as there's, 300 plus trucks or it's the largest convoy ever known, but media is not covering it. And so then I when I read that, I think, is it real? Is this convoy that large? Are the media picking up on it? I honestly don't know.
Some stories here and there. Oddly enough, I saw some of the what you would consider probably mainstream media with some of the larger networks picking up the story yesterday because Elon Musk,
right.
who happens to be the richest man in the world, I think currently, he was tweeting kudos towards the truckers. And I think some U.S. truckers have joined them. The weird thing to me during the last couple of years of the pandemic is that there has been an interesting choice in what has been covered and not covered. And I have family in Europe, so I pay close attention to what happens there. And I think it's important to pay attention to the world. But it used to be every weekend European countries would have fairly large protests for lockdowns or for the COVID passports or the vaccine passports. But those have literally turned into almost daily protests. Some of them mass. We're talking not like hundreds of people. We're talking like tens of thousands of people, 100,000 people, whether you're talking about Sweden or Italy or France. Belgium has had the most violent, but you don't see them ending up on your network news at night, which I don't know why.
I've never heard what you're saying.
If we don't cover them, they're not happening, but they're literally happening now on a daily basis in Europe in a lot of cities, and some of them turning pretty violent where they're breaking out government building windows, setting cop cars on fire. I'm seeing that happen in Holland and Belgium. I pay attention there because that's kind of where my family is and where they go visit. So, but yeah, it's happening a lot. So I haven't seen a lot of attention to any of these where people are coming out in mass speaking against mandates. I don't know why. Well, I guess we can all guess why, but it is frustrating because I think it's important to know what's happening.
But I also don't know that I can believe it's just a COVID issue. I think Americans follow international issues less and less.
Yeah.
And I think you used to see on the nightly news sort of a continuing role of international news in general. And there are very few except sort of the American broadcast system, or if you tune into BBC or you tune into those who specifically focus on international issues.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think COVID is the topic we're talking about, but in general, I don't think you see Americans know very little about other people's governments, and yet other people know a lot about the basics of American government. And so, yeah, I think in general, our interests have turned inward.
Have you ever seen the movie Big Lebowski?
Mm-mm.
So I've watched that movie at least 50 times. I love that movie. Jeff Bridges, John Goodman. It's a brilliant
movie.
What's
it about?
It's about Big Lebowski, the dude.
About the dude.
He's kind of a hippie guy. They like to bowl. And so it centers around the bowling alley. And it's hard to describe. It's a very kind of quirky movie.
I have a hard time getting behind bowling because you have to wear other people's shoes unless you're really committed and have
you
your
know
own.
These guys are committed. Okay, they got a little team. They got a league.
All right.
And there's the John Goodman's character is Walter, and I love Walter, and he has this line in that movie that I've heard a million times, and the last time that I saw it, which was recently, this is how much I love the movie. It meant something completely different because Walter likes to speak in sophisticated terms, although he's not a very sophisticated character. And he's explained to the dude, Big Lebowski, that prior constraint has been roundly rejected by the Supreme Court. And he's talking about this other, but prior constraint is the censorship of a person or before they've ever said anything. The Supreme Court had, I looked this up because I thought, what's he talking about? And prior constraint is that you would censor an individual, an institution, before they could even say anything, not censor them after they've said it, take it off. So they say it in the public domain and then it's censored and taken away. And the Supreme Court had argued that would be okay to censor that way because there are libel laws and slander laws that you could seek redress if you felt you were censored in a unfair way. But prior constraint, where you're not ever allowed to share your information ahead of time, has been roundly rejected by the Supreme Court. Well, that movie was made in the 90s, and I think we have changed. I think prior constraint's happening all over the place now. I think there are individuals and institutions that just aren't able to participate in the public square and share the information that, you know, we'd had different mediums as technology's changed. But anyway, I think prior constraint is no longer roundly rejected by the Supreme Court, in my opinion.
All right.
Prior constraint's happening everywhere.
Okay, speaking of the Supreme
Walter
Court.
Walter would not be happy.
I'm going to watch that in between my watching of Dope Sick. Have either
Don't
of you watched
it around
that?
Your kids, though. It's a little bit.
Oh, if you want to be angry about Big Pharma, the FDA, the flow of people that work in between, go watch that. It's interesting. So, Dope Sick, put that on your watch list, and I'll watch yours. I want to talk about the Supreme Court really quick here. Because last week we were talking about Utah Supreme Court. Now, all of a sudden, after, I think, probably years of people kind of wondering if Justice Breyer would be stepping down. I think because Democrats hoping that it would happen at the right time when they had control of the Senate and a president there. I think it's been happening probably since President Obama. He is going to step down at the end of his term, which will probably be about June or July of this year, giving the president time to get a pick and get them passed through before the midterm elections in case anything changes. He promised Mara during his campaign that he would choose, if he had the option, a black woman. It sounds like he's going to fulfill that pick. Is this a good thing, a bad thing, and why?
So it's exciting because there are so many qualified candidates in that category. So we will not have a problem, as I think we have seldom had a problem in the United States getting qualified candidates. And so I think that we have had a history of people being qualified. There's a short list. Everyone's seen it. It's been out for quite a while. These are amazingly able women. I think what will be interesting is Breyer was one of the few that held down a middle line. He was middle of center or left. And he sort of was compared often to Sandra Day O'Connor in terms of being a moderate. And you didn't know quite where they would go. And they were more strictly interpreters of the law. They were very conscientious of not having any political language or a political affiliation. It was really important to them that they had a judicial philosophy, but they were really holders down. Which should be the goal, but I appreciated that they reinforced that notion with vigor, even with their peer group. So I'm hoping we get someone who brings that aspect as well. I don't want to lose that language of the court that says, you know, and I think our Chief Justice at this point does this as well. It's important to Roberts that he continues to say, hey, listen, you guys speak in terms like this. We don't. We actually have philosophies, and our philosophies conflict, but they're not political philosophies. So I think it's appropriate, and I think it is a promise that will be kept. But if the underlying question is, have we limited the qualified pool by first choosing a black woman? No, we have not limited the qualified pool at all.
And it seems, interestingly enough, that if this happens...
I can't wait till it's my turn.
I know. If this happens and a black woman is chosen, it would make the balance of the court for the first time as close to a split of men and women.
Gender,
as we've ever had before. That would be 4-5. And Sandra Day O'Connor was the first woman who was nominated and then placed on the Supreme Court. So a lot's happened in the last couple of decades. Greg, I feel like you're chomping at the bit.
I am. Okay. So I think we might have mentioned this last week that this announcement had come on our last podcast. Did we?
We were talking about the state Supreme Court.
Okay. Yeah, we were talking.
I wish you would listen
so
to that, us.
I know. I should really pay attention to what we actually say. So this one's so funny because usually the justice will be the one to make the announcement. But I think after the Ruth Bader Ginsburg incident where she didn't really want to leave and she probably thought that Hillary was going to win, and so she hung on, and then they lost the opportunity to appoint the Democrat to appoint that justice. The story was broke from the White House side, which doesn't usually happen. And so it made me, I had this image in my mind of Breyer being informed, guess what you're announcing?
They didn't join press conference.
I think that Breyer's like eyes when he was on the TV when he was announcing it, he was just like almost like in a hostage situation. Like, I've been told I have to leave now or else because the midterms could change everything. And
he's been broadly applauded for going back to the old tradition of giving runways. Mitch McConnell has said it's going to be no problem placing somebody.
You look at the time before the midterms where he doesn't announce it himself and it gets announced. I just find it to be a little funny.
It was a joint conference.
No, they leaked it. Well, all I know is my phone started buzzing like crazy and he hadn't said a word yet. And everybody had the breaking news that he was out. Right. So I think he did it under duress. I think the man was like threatened, and so he's leaving scared is what's happening. Now
he's a who
President Biden gets to pick. I love and I wish I think I love the optimism that you shared about the qualifications and how great and how deeply ready and qualified this nominee will be. It's going to be Kamala Harris. And it's only going to be for one reason.
Okay, saw my gosh. Tweets about
that. This is why. He cannot stand that woman. President Biden is done with her.
So he would give her a power where she could sit on the bench for decades?
Oh, my gosh, put a bow on it. He's like, oh, absolutely.
So I'm going to attempt to give Greg credit.
It's just going to bring sunshine to his administration. And he is just saying to her, this is yours. Put a bow on it. You are out of here.
I don't think they like each other as much as we thought, though, when they were running. I don't think he's...
They don't get along.
It also can't happen because it's a 50-50 vote and she's the tie. So it's not Kamala. It's not going to be... That. I know you're having a moment.
I just am amused by this whole thing.
Kamala's going to the Supreme Court. Mitt Romney will be the VP. That's not happening.
She doesn't like him. There's all this drama going on. All her staff's quitting. And all of a sudden he's like, I got an idea. Why don't you go over there? Over there would be a beautiful place for you to go. I think that amuses me. I think that's what would happen. That'll be true political theater, don't you think?
I think that this is going to be, hopefully, a really nice process because we have heard the Republican leader say, hey, listen, I think this is going to work out. And so maybe for the first time in a while, we don't have to have vitriol. We'll have, qualified candidates. They'll put it forth. We'll have a discussion. The court will embrace it. That's what I think is going to happen. Or there's what Greg Hughes reads on Twitter. One or the other.
A couple of these possible candidates, too, I think could possibly pull some votes from the Republican side, too, which I think is always nice when we look at our country to see that you can actually get some agreement for both sides. Whether or not, I guess it always, you have to wait and see what comes out of the woodwork because everyone's got a skeleton or two, but.
Yeah, why couldn't they just decide they wanted to pick a black female for a justice, but not announce it ahead of time so it didn't look so siloed in its review? Because isn't it? I mean, why check boxes of gender and color? Why can't you just say the best qualified, but then wink and nod, say it amongst yourselves, like keep it to yourselves. This is where we want to go. But why you gotta advertise it?
Because Joe Biden just decided to be straight and not like. Trick and spin.
It's not
public.
A trick or spin. It just looks like
you just
it's,
said
it
I'm
just
gonna,
looks
I'm
like
gonna let you know.
It just looks like it's more formulaic than it is someone that rises to the top. But you could have done it and just made it an internal priority. You didn't have to make it the clarion call.
I don't know that it looks like formula to me because I just think he announced this incredibly qualified pool and just said that's where it's going to come from.
Okay.
All right. We'll see what happens next. I want to talk about Burgess Owens for a minute because he was up and visiting, and I should say all of our congressional leaders at some point usually make a stop at the legislature, go talk to people, talk about, what's important to Utahns. It's a good way to figure out where the priorities lie. He went and visited the House and Senate Republicans, but skipped meeting with the Democratic caucus. Greg, should this matter? Does it matter that he skips over? Because he represents an entire state, obviously, not or his district, not just one side or the other.
So it used to be that the address by our Washington delegation, our senators and our members of Congress, they would address the committee of the whole floor of the House, and they would go to the Senate and do the same. And then it was during my time that we thought, you know, the time is precious. We got to have less, you know, committee of the whole speeches and really keep working because there's time is so short. And so there was a decision that was made that members of Congress of the delegation would go to the respective caucuses. I am not 100% sure that it's always been the Republican and Democrat caucus that's been visited. I don't know because I don't remember.
We would just visited one.
I just don't know. I really don't know the answer to that.
I feel like we have to blame you for something here because
I don't think we made a rule. I just think because it's like every caucus
you made a
makes
rule
their
that they could only visit the Republicans. I'm shocked by this.
Now you're being theatrical. I did not make any rule like that. I am just saying that what we did is we went from a formal moment on the floor of the House to the caucuses planning their caucus meetings and then inviting members of the delegation to speak to the caucus.
And those meetings are closed door often, so the media can't come to them. So
houses
I prefer,
are open usually.
Yeah, but I prefer going back to where they were on the floor and we could actually hear what they were saying.
Here's what was goofy about this is that Owen shot back pretty quick. What are you talking about? You guys didn't invite me. And that was an interesting public shoot back. He was clearly
It is a
annoyed.
Calendared event
then,
that a caucus
and
puts
then
together.
I think it was Representative Stoddard who shot back. This is all online. Shot back. Are you kidding me? Your office is the one who called us. You were scheduled for XYZ and your office said you couldn't make it and pulled it back. So what was sort of felt goofy was that they were having this public
discussion
about,
war.
You didn't invite me. No, yes, I did invite you. So, you know, let's just hope with the many visits that Congressman Owens makes to our state, he had to just make good. Go visit the Dems.
Absolutely. I don't think he's afraid of it.
I'm not a big fan of calling people out on Twitter, though. I don't know that that ever, like, mends fences or makes things better. I think people always get defensive, when you're blaming them for things online.
That's what feels a little weaselly, right? It's like telling mom. I'm like, you know, no, just work that out.
Yeah, I agree.
Call each other up like the
olden
days.
It's a scheduling deal. That's all it is now. It's a scheduling deal.
All right. Well, that's good to know. Speaking of some drama happening up at on the Hill here in Utah, Representative, I've just lost their names. Who was kicked off there? It was
Derek Kitchen.
Derek Kitchen,
Senator,
yes.
And Kathleen Reby.
Senator Derek Kitchen and Senator Kathleen Reby. They both lost a committee assignment mid-session. A lot of people are asking, is this the rule of thumb? Is this politics? Mara, have you been up there behind the scenes trying to figure out what's happening? Because this happened yesterday. We're 2 weeks in, and this isn't a very long session.
So I have two distinct thought process here. I just would like to outline two. My first one is going to say, being a Democrat in a hyper super majority Republican House and Senate is being between a rock and a hard place the whole time, right? It is a tough road to hoe. It's regardless of party, it's a tough road to hoe to be in a super minority. And you've got to figure that out and just sort of constantly navigating it, constantly negotiating, constantly not having enough cards in your hand compared to the other people. So I just want to acknowledge what it must be like to be a Democrat in the state of Utah, always between a rock and a hard place. So parking that thought, my second thought is the challenge with being a legislator, why I would never want to be a legislator, is you join a legislative body. Mm-hmm. You're not a mayor. You are not there to make unilateral decisions. You're not the mayor. You're not the governor. You don't have staff. You are in a body. And it's what Greg Hughes was so good at. The ones that are really good are the ones that like to work in bodies.
Ooh, is there a unicorn going to walk in here? Am I in a dream? Did she just say that out loud?
Well, let's talk about the characteristics that require. No. Like, so when you're working in the body, you have to build consensus. You have to be involved in the intrigue. You have to know when to push and when to pull.
So were they not consensus builders?
Well, so there have been Democrats that have done really well. Mm-hmm. Scott McCoy has done well. Ben McAdams did well. I'm staying in the Senate for a minute. So two rumors are happening with. One was that Derek Kitchen, so the Democrats held a press conference this week, and the Democrats in the Senate, and they, the point of the press conference was to say, hey, we're getting some things done. We're working with our Republicans. Well, apparently off script, Senator Kitchen went on a 10-minute rant about how much the COVID stuff and the masks wearing was offending him at the Capitol, and that was completely off script. So I think he ticked off his own caucus, and he certainly didn't, you know, do well by Senator Adams or others in leadership. And then the rumor is of Senator Reby is that she from the beginning had a conversation with Lieutenant Governor Henderson about how frustrated she was and how she's having a hard time working in the body. And she has been pushing really hard. And I think she's chosen to maybe push some buttons, which is a choice. And so I think there was an opening because of Senator Maine. Mm. Many of us have heard she's sick.
Yeah.
And so she probably won't be returning this session. And so they moved Senator Robles up into rules, and that opens it up. Now, it's very, very rare that they will change assignments. Greg can give us the party line on the statement that was put out is that usually you're just on, as a senator, you're put on two committees. The Democrats are usually put on three because there's not very many of them. And they said this just was an alignment. Senator Karen Maine, a Democrat, said that that was okay. But I just want to say there's a little bit of intrigue in that it clearly is punishment. And they hadn't figured out how to do that push-pull and play that game of building needed consensus, particularly when you're the minority in a caucus.
So I think punishments is strong. I don't think it's
so.
That.
This is more of a timeout. Sit on the stairs I
think,
for
well,
5 minutes.
I think if you do have some committee spots that, for unplanned reasons, like Senator Maine becoming ill, that and you have to make some changes, it may open the door for other changes as well. You can reorganize because you're going to lose someone from one committee, so you're starting to move some things. It can have a domino effect. But here is the. To Mara's point about being a Democrat, it is difficult. But I will say that in one of the years on my first day speech, I spoke about how often Republicans and Democrats in the House vote together and how much overlap there is on just hard work, public policy that doesn't really fit neatly in one party's platform or another. And you saw on the wings where bills were voted on strictly by partisan measures, but they were very small compared to if you look at Washington, D.C., where everything seems to be hyper-partisan. Yeah. Almost in every vote. And my point then and my point now is if you're a policymaker, if you're a lawmaker, you have to make a decision. Am I going to party build? Am I going to use my position as a lawmaker to draw a contrast between the Republicans and the Democrats, the party platforms and their differences? And am I going to use my position to bring to highlight that and to bring attention to that, or am I going to work and look to find consensus and build numbers and get enough votes to pass something? And it is a Republican body, so for a Democrat to do that kind of building consensus when you need those votes, you cannot get those votes by yourself with all the Democrats. There's not enough Democrats to pass a bill on the House floor or the Senate floor. You're going to have to pull Republicans in to get things accomplished. There's a difference of opinion. Some Democrats resent that. They don't like to see that kind of working and making your bill or your legislation palatable for Republicans to support. They feel like they're losing something in doing that. And there are some that say, I need you to do something. I need the needle to move, and I need you to be effective in that job. And that's the body we're sending you to. So, yeah, it's hard, and you got to make a decision. And clearly, from what I've just heard, I think you have two senators that want a party build. They want to be a little bit more strident in their differences with the Republicans. And so, yeah, it doesn't lend itself to consensus and collaboration and things like that. So, it is what it is.
Does this mean that Senator Kitchen and Reby are going to have short terms up on the Hill, or can they fix things and figure out how to hold hands?
Like our former host here, Jim DeBacchus, he was a famous flamethrower. He loved party building through his position as a state senator, and he did fine.
So, I mean, one thing remember is how safe their seats are for Democrats generally. So in Utah, if you're in a safe Republican seat, it's safe. And if you're in a safe Democratic seat, it tends to be really safe. And so it's not a matter of them not reflecting their constituencies. I mean, I think that's part of the frustration Democrats often say is, hey, you know what? I think my bill that's maybe not palatable to the body is actually more reflective of Utahns. A common complaint of Democrats is that they feel like they're reflecting citizens sometimes more than the Republicans caucusing in at the House do and the Senate. So I think they'll be fine in terms of reelection. They might even find, as Greg suggested, Jim DeBacchus found a really strong voice. He very seldom passed a bill. He was not known effective. His caucus and even his peers didn't find him effective, but the populace did. They relied on him to express his feelings, and there's a role for that. There's a role for sort of standing
on the... You can be
the
bully pulpit guy.
Yeah.
You can be the conscience of your party or your of your platform.
There's different roles. It's just we have to remember that legislators and legislatures are bodies of governance, not individuals.
And it's just human nature. Look, you're going to work with those that work with you. And so that's going to breed on, that's going to build on itself. If you're working with people and you're trying to work across the aisle and you're building consensus, there's that. Then there's the other version of being the conscience of your party, your platform. You want, you know, being more of a populist. So different roles, but, you know, it is, that's politics.
So maybe to switch it a little, this did show something else I think that is playing out in real time that I just so physically noticed at the Capitol. It's a topic we talk about every time we get together, which is COVID. Mm-hmm. And so Derek,
you're bringing up COVID.
I know, and I usually don't.
You are the one that wants to end this.
I'm always the one that wants to stop talking conversation. About it. But what's interesting about, I think, the Derek Kitchen moment particularly is that I think where he sort of lost it, not lost it as in crazy, but like where
was he wearing four masks instead of three?
Was he? And if you want to see some interesting cultural battles that are 50-50, go up to the legislature. The virtue signaling on both sides is just right in front of you. And so when you walk up there, the Democrats are like short of hazmat suits, right? And then the Republicans are like licking each other when they meet
each other. They're licking doorknobs before they go in.
It's just so, like, I have been mask shamed on both sides within an hour, right? Like, so have you, Greg. Like, we've talked about this. Like,
so you split the difference and you didn't wear a respirator. You just wore like a sexy cloth mask. And now they're like, okay, that's mesh.
It is interesting. It's right there at the Capitol right now.
Yeah. I hate that COVID's turned into a religion for people, like whatever you are. It's just like, let's take a deep breath. I mean, be reasonable, but holy cow, we do not worship the altars of either licking each other or quadruple masking. Like, let's find some middle ground.
I will just say, I don't like masks, but I love opening doors now of like commercial establishments with my sleeve or something that isn't
you
my
got
hand.
Rid of your pirate hook.
Yeah, what
I don't have
to
that hook
handy,
anymore.
Dandy,
I had that hook was awesome, but I don't have it now.
Wasn't it some like mineral?
No, it was brass, power. So it doesn't carry germs on it. But I like to just take my sleeve. I try to open doors and stuff without my hands because I actually just think I've actually watched people now and they kind of cough in their hands and pick their nose and I'm just like thinking
there's a lot.
I don't want to touch what everybody touches. Just forget COVID. I just think it's actually a pretty good habit to pick up on and quit touching things that gross
people
touch.
I guess, but this is how humans have survived over all these years.
Building
just,
that immune.
Yeah, are you the smartest? Are you
I don't
want to
touch people's snot. I'm done. I mean, whatever I got, I got. I'm 52. I either have it now, I have the immunity now, or I don't. I'm stuck.
Good information. All right, we're at the point where we've got a lightning round it. I do want to mention that after years of talking about period products, which is one of Greg's favorite things, Representative Lisenby's bill passes unanimously. And what I think actually made this one happen is there's been a big social media push by Kristen Andress. I don't know if you follow her, but she calls her the chief culture officer of her home. She and her husband own... What's the smokers called? My brain can't think of the word. Traeger grills. Anyhow, she has a pretty wide reach on social media. And I think, I don't know if she's the one to credit, but it seems to me that she's sort of pushed this one over the finish line where people are like, okay,
there's a great online movement. It's super positive. The bill is positive. It's got bipartisan support. Greg needs to say the period project, we need to fund it.
If we could just pass it without having to talk about it for a long time, it's just an uncomfortable topic. It's just, you get anything you want. Anything you want. If you on this topic, name your price. I don't want to talk about it.
I can see the hair growing
on Greg's
knuckles
done.
Right
love
now.
Done. Love it. Love it. Next topic. Growing. Lightning round. Lightning I love it. Round. I never heard of a better topic or issue. I'd vote yes.
Okay, school transparency bills. We've got two of them going on, and one of them died today by choice. And that was, I believe, the House Bill 234, Representative Jordan Tusher. How do I say his name right?
Tusher.
I don't want to call him Tusher because it's like Tush, like your bum.
Oh, you're ripping on his name. That's great. Oh,
I thought it might be Tusher.
Make sure you interview him soon. Oh, that'll be fun.
That will be fun. He's from South Jordan.
She's upgraded his name.
I know. I just tried to make it fancy for him.
Did you ever say your name out loud? Do you understand what you're saying? I'm trying to help you here. That's what you could tell
him. I learned something about him, though, when I was researching. Total random fact. But you know when something's going on in the world and it just draws your attention to it? I've been paying a lot of attention to Ukraine right now. And he apparently worked and did some law practicing in Ukraine. So random fact about him. But he had a bill that was really trying to get a little more transparency for parents where teachers would have to put their curriculum online. There was a lot of pushback on this. He's pulled back, said that he's going to look at it during the interim and talk about it. But we have another bill that remains, Lincoln Fillmore, also from South Jordan. This is Senate Bill 114, where he wants educators, again, to be putting everything online. I want to talk a little bit about whether or not this even works conceptually, because as a parent, I mean, yeah, do I want to know what my kids are talking about in class? Am I going to go online and read every lesson plan? And is it even possible? Is this wasting teachers' time? Or can we just trust our teachers to go in there, do a good job, and talk to our kids? What do you think, Mara?
Teaching is a profession. People go to it. They study it. There's a professional grade. There's a philosophy to it. They devote their lives to it. There's an expertise to it. And to suggest to insert non-experts into the process does nothing but dilute a process. It's also surprisingly big brother of the Republicans in this instance. But I think this deserves a lot more thoughtful consideration, because we're bandying the round of transparency and parents get to know everything. Well, in the United States, we have decided that lower education should be open and free to the public. You have a choice of not having your kids there, but we also require our teachers to go to four-year schools, get postgraduate degrees, stay up on certificates. It's a profession. We should honor it. We should honor the people who have the expertise. And this is in all fields of government. I have this enormous problem on the left, who is most often the people that want to insert generic public people into professionals' opinions. So I'm going to just talk about this more conceptually, because I know it's this flashpoint where they're like, but they're parents. Yes, and you can petition your school board, and you can petition your teacher, and there is obviously a role for parents, and so we all agree on that. But I want to respect that this is a profession and who I want to make curriculum choices. Otherwise, then why don't we just send out a survey of parents and we all just consensus decide what our kids should build as sort of a public access process? My kids learn things that I wouldn't have thought to teach. Why? I'm not a professional educator. Yeah. I really trust the I would rather professionalize it. I would rather keep it professional. Yes, parents need avenues, but they don't, lay people do not need avenues into professional decision making. So let's do that next with real estate. So when you all come up, when they appraise my house or when they come up with a price, why don't we let all the neighbors in the neighborhood decide on whether that price was a good price or not? Well, because they're not the experts in their industry. So going broader, I just want to say, please respect that teaching has a history and a professional standard. And yes, you should have the right to talk about your child, but I do not think lay people should be making curriculum decisions. And it's not transparency. It's about protecting free and public school and having it have professional standards.
The interesting thing too, before you get going, Greg, is I think that parents, I mean, I barely like sign the papers in the morning before my kids go to school. Right. I think of myself as an involved parent, but do I go and read every word if they were going to post online? No. And I think that oftentimes when these problems come up, where you're, whether you're talking about the hot button issue of CRT or whatever's coming on, I don't think those things are ever in a teacher. Well, maybe they sometimes are in a teacher's lesson plans, but when I hear the things that come up with that are red flags on the left or the right, it seems like teachers are talking about things that are happening in the news where the conversation comes up, and it's not something you would have planned ahead about. It's somebody who was shot by a police officer or a protest happening here or there. And so they come up as a part of the discussion, as just a natural evolution of what kids are hearing and seeing going on around them. Can you plan around that?
You know, look, I think that a bunch of things are coming together. I think this is why Governor Youngkin won the election in Virginia, because I think parents are frustrated. I don't think that school boards are giving parents a place where they can really speak. I mean, we had parents arrested in Alpine because they want to come and speak to the school board, but it wasn't an item on the agenda, so they weren't allowed to speak about their concerns. You have the video that came out where the high school teacher from Lehigh said some things that I think if parents if they knew that what they were watching in that classroom parents could see, I don't think the teacher would have said the things that she had said there. And I think that's a worry to parents that did the only time that ever happened is the one time the student hit record on their phone. They worry that it's not. And then you hear the stories about CRT. It happens at the same time where the curriculum that a state has, and they write this curriculum over time, and they'll review it and they'll make adjustments. It used to be the case that states without regard to red or blue used to have in their curriculum benchmarks like Gettysburg Address, Underground Railroad, Harriet Tubman. The new curriculum, as you're seeing it written now, is far more vague. you're not seeing these touch points and these moments that are expected to be explored or studied in the curriculum as it's been being written. So that's happening, and this year is the year where I think K through 6 or 7 is being rewritten, and the verbiage is not of those moments like it has been in other states and has been in Utah in the past. And the fear there is that this is, if it's vague, then that's where you can fit critical race theory or other areas of curriculum that you wouldn't want to put neon lights around, but the curriculum's vague so you can talk about it. Here's what I'd like. And I've had people that I like
to know the preamble of the Constitution. Oh, look, like me.
If you wanted to, not that everybody would do it.
Schoolhouse Rock for me.
If not everybody would do it, but you know, you have committee hearings that you can listen to. You have floor debates that you can see. Protect the privacy of children. Make sure that children's privacy is not being violated. Maybe it's that you can see the teacher or you can see the class, but not the students, or you have to have a password to be a parent. But what's wrong with a parent being able to listen or observe the class as it's being taught, especially because you'll have some students that come home that'll need help with homework? It would be informative to understand how that class or that lesson was taught, to help your child if you had the homework assignment or something like that. I think if we went transparency that way where you could actually see it.
So you would support that any state office, anything publicly funded, I should be able to watch those people do their jobs.
No, I'm talking about our classrooms with our kids in it.
I'm talking about if you're worried that your children get educated in a way that you are not comfortable with and that child believes them, that you're not very effective at your house.
If you have values
that you think are really important to your kids, then transparency should happen in your home. Because unless you decide that every professional environment deserves that level of oversight and that level of intrusion, I agree with Mike McKell on this, who is a Republican senator who said, you know, we have those accesses right now. And I just think, Greg, in the name of being a parent, you are taking a profession and you're not respecting it. Plus, I don't know if we've noticed, but we've just keep piling on to the teachers what we have. They're not our babysitters. If you're worried about a curriculum, then work on transparency and communication with your child.
I just think it would be informative to all these. And look, I think you could gain a lot of empathy. If you saw a crowded classroom and you saw that it was challenging. No, I'm talking about our children.
No, because, but what's the difference?
Well, because I have not seen a video of a high school teacher saying things that she was terminated for saying to kids. And I think that's something that I don't think is the only time it's ever occurred. I don't think we're that lucky to see this lightning strike and the only time something like that's ever happened.
Sexual harassment happens all the time in the state workplace.
But
why
I'm
don't
telling
we
you,
follow everyone around and then we'll know if there's harassment.
I see no threat to a teacher or the delivery of education if parents could hear and observe the lessons as they're being taught. And look, what if a teacher has a crowded classroom and it's hard to manage that classroom? It would be good for parents to understand the challenges that an educator is going through with a large classroom. And you might see that empathy raise with those parents in terms of how a teacher is educating or delivering education to their classroom. Look, man, if you were a kid and you knew your parents could watch you, do you think you're going to misbehave or backtalk or be bad if your parent could see that class?
I think you might, because it's like reality TV shows where at some point you lose awareness if the camera's around.
I just think it changes everything and doesn't respect the classroom. I also just think it's an undue burden.
This is, as
Mike McKell said, this is a solution looking for a problem. And I just think it's so unnecessary.
Don't you think it's good to have cameras at the debates on the floor of the house? I mean, isn't that a good thing?
That's public lawmaking. You're elected to do
that. Well, it's public school.
You could homeschool your kids. But I think always there will be good and bad of everything. There's good teachers, there's bad teachers.
Okay, is it wrong because it's disrespectful that parents could listen in or watch the lesson being taught? Is that what you're saying?
It's just frankly not needed. There's not a problem. I don't know of any. I have heard angry parents who don't feel heard. And what I hear them saying is, I'm not being agreed with. I think that there are very few. I think if you were having a problem with your child, I can't imagine a scenario where a teacher wouldn't help you figure out the problem you're having with your child. Well, where I have heard is it's political problems that parents are having and they don't feel agreed
with. What about that poor little girl that got bullied?
Well, Greg, you're always going to find a scenario, but you know what? That's not what we make public policy around. It's not what we make public policy around.
They're going to make some policy around that one.
That argument of there, that means you should actually put it in every public place that
I think there should be some transparency in those classes. And I don't think hearing or seeing that
happens in every
that
single
lesson
place
being taught is a it should be a threat to anyone. We should be a, we parents will learn from those lessons.
I'm just going to go really pedantic for a second. I mean, we have a hard time doing the podcast board half the time. So now you want school districts to pay for expensive equipment that has to be maintained. The continuing burden in the name of oversight says the guy who can't work his, you know, iPad.
Well, yeah, so, but it's easy for young people. They're technology natives. So the kids grew up around this stuff.
At some point, though, like how much the video you save. And I don't know, there's so much to look into. And here's the thing. I think this is interesting when you talk about what our kids hear in classrooms, because I think there's always going to be a teacher who says something where you're like, I can't believe they said that. Or, you know, maybe your kids tell you or you don't. But I think sometimes whether the teacher should have said it or not, having our kids introduced ideas that are different than maybe what they've heard or learned or is right or wrong, you know, sometimes I think it teaches them critical thinking skills. And I think the interesting thing is that we can always look at the influence that parents have on their kids, because every time there's a presidential election, they'll go hold an election in an elementary school classrooms. And the president is always who the kids vote for, because the kids listen to their parents and they vote how their parents do, like almost 100% of the time. And so it's not like kids aren't hearing the lessons from you and talking about them. So talk to your kids at the dinner table and ask them specific questions. What did you learn in this class? Have questions about, you know, what their teachers are saying or doing, and teach them those critical thinking skills, because not everyone's going to think like you or your kids. And I don't know, maybe it'll teach them to be the House Speaker someday.
I think that more transparency would be better.
All right, charter schools with cameras on them everywhere.
Cameras everywhere. Greg wants cameras on everything.
I'm going to tell you, there are conscientious parents who've reached out to parents when their kid comes home saying something that is their six-year-old's talking about suicide and certain things, and they're like, I think that's a little bit of a heavy topic. And the answer that this parent gets back is a non-answer.
Right,
It leaves a parent
parent's
not knowing what
over
to do next.
Professionals' judgment. And at the end of the day, if you want to send your child to a free public school, who I would like making decisions are trained professionals. That's who I want making decisions. I do not want to over-politicize schools, which I think is what's happening. I don't want this to be consensus made from a poll of the parents in my neighborhood. I want trained counselors, trained principals, trained teachers who I have trust in. And yes, you will always find someone in the system who breaks down. But you and I agree that every system has that.
Yeah.
So I trust the teachers.
But I am telling you, what you just argued was Governor McAuliffe's argument in Virginia. And Youngkin said the other side of it. He took the side of the parents. And Youngkin won. I don't think what you're saying.
Youngkin won a political exercise.
No, but so, I don't think parents would agree with you.
Rhetoric
I think parents
wins politics.
Will argue that they have the best interest of their child at heart.
But parents aren't the professionals.
I think we could do that. We could stick the cameras in the room. I just think that very few parents will actually.
I don't think parents are ready to take away that.
We're talking about school, Greg. We're not talking about the influence of
your
child.
You're the professional. I'm not. Have at it.
This is school. Unless you've ceded the raising of your children to the teacher.
Well, you do the way you've described it.
No,
you're not allowed to have an opinion. You're not allowed to talk about it.
No, I'm saying at the moment, I'm fine with a teacher teaching my child. I have had instances where, as Heidi suggests, my child learned something that I don't agree with. I don't feel threatened by that. I feel invigorated.
I don't either.
To have a discussion with my kid about like, oh, that's interesting. That's what you learned. What about this? I'm not threatened by my child knowing things I don't know, believing things I don't believe, seeing a world that I don't see. None of that threatens my influence with my children.
I'm just at the point where I want my kids to be at school five days.
You're just
a week.
Tired. Yeah. You just want them out. You want them out and gone. I can see it in your eyes. You're like, just quit talking about it. I don't want to slow it down. Just get going.
No, I want to slow time down. I work from 2 to 11, and so I'm basically home during the day when my kids are at school, so I kind of miss out on their lives. So I've sort of selfishly liked this whole pandemic life where they're home on and off and throughout the school year. So that part's good. I don't know if they've been learning all they should, but it's been real great.
Learn, schmern.
Wearing our pajamas all day long and doing whatever we want. All right, well, we haven't solved all the world's problems, but we've discussed some of them. Thanks so much for being with us this week. I'm sure there will be more drama to talk about next week. Tell your friends about us, subscribe to the podcast, and give us a rating.